97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
And I'm Ryan Recker filling in. Wow, what a great show so far. I've really had a lot of fun. Joining us now is someone with hotair.com. You can also check out his podcast, Dwayne's World, his blog, That Way Too, producer of The Hugh Hewitt Show, Dwayne Patterson. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, that was a great intro, Ryan. We've had a great show thus far, and now we're going to Hot Air Sky. That was kind of fun.
If you can just bear with us for another 10 minutes, I swear it'll get better.
Exactly.
Okay, I wanted to throw at you headlines, and I want you to tell me what, in the order you think they are, should be ranked in importance. Okay. Ozzy Osbourne passes away. Hulk Hogan passes away. Department of Justice getting the Obama files. Yeah. You have the Epstein controversy and perhaps Maxwell singing like a canary. I think that was what some people are mentioning. So the further of that. So of those four stories, how would you rank them?
Now, you preface it by what should be important, right? Or what is.
What should be important.
Okay, what should be
the order?
What should be is the referral to the DOJ. That should be number one.
Okay, number one.
Number
two...
I would say culturally, Hulk Hogan had a bigger influence than Ozzy Osbourne did. Although Ozzy Osbourne certainly had his following as well, but I mean, my gracious, how many kids had little Hulkamaniac dolls when they were growing up as kids? I mean, Hulk was around for several decades. I would put probably Hulk 2, Ozzy 3, and the Epstein stuff 4th. And the reason I put the Epstein thing 4th out of those four is because, honestly, I mean, just nobody has been able to make the credible case to me that a Merrick Garland Department of Justice willing to interact with state prosecution and special counsels, throwing everything they could at Donald Trump to lock him up, indict him, arrest him, mugshot him, raid Mar-a-Lago, go through Melania's panty drawer. I mean, everything they could throw at him, they threw at him. And you're telling me that if there was some secret thing on a file somewhere that they could cherry-pick and isolate of Donald Trump being a problem with Jeffrey Epstein, they wouldn't have released that somewhere along the way? It just defies credulity to believe that. So if there was a there, I think it would have been out by now.
Okay. Well, let's talk about those files then. And you have Tulsi Gabbard coming out and saying, how about we refer this for a further investigation? In fact, you have other senators that want to see this really
task
escalated
force, right?
Quite quickly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get a task force. Okay. You know, there is some immunity for Barack Obama. Is this just basically a way to show you that Donald Trump is vindicated? He was right all along. Is this a way to embarrass him? Is this a way to hurt the Democratic Party? What do you think the outcome and the most likely scenario would be if they continue to investigate this?
Oh, the most likely scenario is John Brennan is probably going to be the guy that is in the most legal jeopardy, I would think. Do I think that Bill and Hillary Clinton are going to be frog marched or Barack Obama or anybody like that? No, I am under no delusion that this is going to be one of those moments where, you know, you can say, oh, finally justice. I'm not that naive, but people like James Brennan, he is, how did I see it phrased on Fox earlier today? I think it was said on Fox today that he's the equivalent of a 30-point buck out in the open. He's a pretty big fish, and he has no immunity, and he certainly wasn't. He didn't get one of those auto pen pardons, so he's a sitting duck right now.
I tend to agree with that too. I think that. And well, I guess.
And John Brennan, by the way, let's keep in mind the kind of character that John Brennan is. If you're talking about the intelligence community of the United States over the last couple of decades, John Brennan is like the Nosferatu of intel assets.
Hmm. What about, I guess, going in to the direction of the people around him and at least finding some truth of what went on in that 2016 election? Here's what I would say. More times than not, Donald Trump is found to be telling the truth when they call him a liar. And the things that he say are real and what's happening tend to be vindicated down the line. However, he doesn't get the credit for it, nor does the media go and correct themselves. So I tend to give him the benefit of the doubt on a lot of these different stories. But when it comes to stories like Jeffrey Epstein and the gravity of the nature of what's surrounding him, it gets a little bit more trickier. But I think the biggest piece of evidence is what you brought up. There's no way Democrats would have sat on that information if it was real. There's no chance.
You were alive and sentient during the 24 campaign cycle. If there was anything that they could have thrown at Donald Trump, do you think that they would have had any filter whatsoever? And I'm talking about is either the Biden camp, the Kamala Harris camp, or our friends in resistance media. Do you think if they could have cherry-picked, even if they could have invented using AI, some image of Donald Trump doing something nefarious, you think they wouldn't have stooped to that level if there was any basis to it whatsoever?
Yeah, no, they would have, for sure. Dwayne Patterson is joining us here, hotair.com, host of Dwayne's World podcast, producer of the Hugh Hewitt Show. I can't remember the last time we spoke. It's probably been a month plus, but the last time we spoke, you said something really nice about me on your blog, so I really appreciate that. I appreciate that. I want to tell you, I saw it. And it made my day. I did a quick little, sometimes I search to see, like, okay, I'm just going to search my name real quick. And it popped up on your blog and you said nice things. So Dwayne, thank you.
I have always found that in our business, there's really no reason to make enemies unless they're people that are actually harming the country. And then I've got a problem with it. When you're burying stories intentionally, as our friend Iowa Hawk blog would say, if you're trying to cover stories with a pillow until they quit moving, then you're not really doing your job right. But I like to give people in our business the benefit of the doubt unless they're you know, part of the Borg or the blob back east that's trying to play favors.
Yep. All right, I want to read you a headline. This is from Axios. President Trump said on Thursday that he wanted to see Elon Musk's companies thrive one day after the White House said he didn't want Musk's AI to get government contracts. So, okay, it's a little bit complicated, but it's been a little bit rocky. It looks like that's a step in the maybe they can reconcile things a little bit down the line. Do you ever think Donald Trump and Jerome Powell will ever see eye to eye or ever reconcile? Or is it pretty much dead man walking at this point for Jerome Powell?
Well, you see, that's the kind of fascinating thing about this. It was like a Godfather trip, wasn't it? When Donald Trump went over to the Fed, you know, it was almost like he had cotton in the jowls, right? And he starts walking around with the helmet on, saying, "You know, I like these construction sites." Now, let me give you just a real quick history of Donald Trump. The first time that we interviewed Donald Trump on the Hugh Hewitt Show, was back in probably 2012, 2013, well before he came down the escalator. Donald Trump was approached at one point, or his construction company, Trump whatever, was in the market to maybe pick up a refurbishing contract for the United Nations building in Lower Manhattan. And they chose not to go with his company, and instead they picked some sweetheart contractor that they were getting kickbacks from, and of course it went way over budget, and it was a rotten job, and they had all sorts of problems with it. And the House brought Donald Trump to testify on the UN disaster because it was like, you know, a billion something over budget. And Donald Trump was this is when we got to know who Donald Trump was, and he knows a thing or two about real estate and how to build buildings, right? I mean, that's, you can say that Donald Trump doesn't know a lot about certain things, even though he tends to turn out that he knows more than you think he does. He knows about real estate, and he knows how to build buildings. And he went on a tirade in this House testimony, and at the end, he says, good luck, fellas. You got a real mess on your hands. And when we heard that, I'm thinking, okay, so he's going to go under the auspices of checking out this refurbishing project. That's, again, way over budget. And he brings the media with him. The media gaggle follows him around. He's got his helmet on. And Jerome Powell's right next to him. And he fields a reporter's question who says, so what would you do if your project manager was $1 billion over budget? And Trump says, I'd fire him, right next to Jerome Powell. And Powell had the look in his face like he was looking for the Rolaids. He was looking for the Pez at that point. Now,
right.
So you've got that whole thing going on as the auspices of why he came to visit. You know they had a little one-on-one time where Donald Trump said, so, about these interest rates, right?
Yes.
And you know they had that personal that personal conversation. And at the end, he tells the media, I'm sure Jerome Powell is going to do the right thing. I know he knows how important it is to get. So you, and then of course the reporters say, "Well, this trip over here, are you pressuring him?" Oh no, I'm not pressuring him at all. I'm just checking out the building. Of course, he went over there and said, "Look, we can do this the easy way, or we can do this the hard way. Can they reconcile?" I think if Jerome Powell and the Fed board lowers rates for the next two meetings and raises and lowers it substantially enough to not get in Trump's way, Trump might say, hey, you know, Powell's doing a good job lately. I could see Trump pivoting on a dime if he gets what he wants.
Okay. Well, going back to the Hugh Hewitt show, and you had Donald Trump as a guest, does that mean you have Donald Trump's phone number?
Actually, we do.
Okay. You know,
no, you
I
can't have.
No, I wasn't going to ask, but I heard a story that after he won the 2016 election, he was doing all these interviews, of course, with media, and there was I think it was in Atlanta, he did a radio show interview, and they're like, you know what, it's the day after he won the election, let's just call the number and see if he answers. And how about that, Donald Trump answered after he gave his like big victory speech. And I thought, oh, that's so interesting, he keeps the same phone number. And I always am fascinated at the idea that you can have a president of the United States saved in your contacts.
Well, and again, it's juxtapose that with the previous occupant of 1600 and how inaccessible he was. Even his own donors couldn't get him on the phone. You know, Joe Biden was in a bubble because he was basically a walking vegetable. And Donald Trump is, you can say, again, you can say a lot of things, good and bad, about him if that's your predisposition. But the guy is transparent, and the guy will take any questions. He has spent more minutes answering media questions in 6 months than Barack Obama and Joe Biden did in 12 years combined. He sometimes does four different press avails a day. It's astounding what he actually does. You mentioned having the president's number. A lot of most journos in D.C. actually have his phone number. When we saw yesterday, CNN try to change the narrative from the Tulsi Gabbard Russiagate expose, they cut away from Tulsi Gabbard, and they're like, no, but Epstein, that's, they went all day, we got to make Epstein the story, that's the most important thing, because we found pictures of Epstein at Donald Trump's wedding 22 years ago, that's what everybody cares about. Andrew Kaczynski, who does the K-File, was on, and he said, I called the president. I've got his phone number. I called him. And how'd that conversation go, Andrew? It went for about 30 seconds. He answered, and I told him what I was doing and what the story was, and I wanted to know if he wanted to comment on all these Epstein revelations. And the president says, you've got to be kidding me, and hung up on him. But he answered the phone. He answered the call.
This is one of those, going back to the vindication side, every time this comes up, when we learn about and documents become sort of public and we get to see behind the Epstein thing, what we find is that people try to draw Donald Trump into it, which is really fascinating because you hear some of the testimonies in the transcripts from the victims, and the people that are doing these sort of depositions are saying, so tell me when you saw Trump there. And they'll say, no, we never saw Trump there, but you certainly saw him at the airport. Oh, you saw him on the plane. But they tried to inject in there, and all of them said no, 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 no to him. And then they put up this big document dump, and his hotel was mentioned, Trump Hotel. So, you can Google search and see Trump's names in the transcript when they're mentioning his hotel, but it doesn't say anything about him as a participant in any of this perverted stuff. So right. I tend to hear these type of stories and dismiss them pretty quickly.
Well, and I do too, because lost in the media's portrayal or attempted portrayal to sling the mud is they don't report the fact that Donald Trump didn't like Epstein much and threw him out of his club. Threw him out of. I mean, he went along with him because he was kind of a player back in the 90s. And once he kind of figured out, you know, this guy's kind of a creepy guy, I don't want to have anything to do with him, he booted him out. Okay, Bill Clinton didn't do that.
No, he did not. In fact, it's quite the opposite, actually. Dwayne Patterson, if people want to look you up online, where can they go?
DwayneWorld.com, DwayneWorld.com. And I
there you
appreciate
are.
The plug.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate your time here today. I always enjoy the conversation.
You got it. Thanks, Ryan.
And joining us after the break, Billboard Chris, big announcement. Kaiser Permanente is announcing that they're going to stop gender surgery on minors. And I think Billboard Chris would have something to say about that coming up, too. I'm Ryan Recker filling in for Mark Reardon, 97.1 FM Talk. And I'm Ryan Recker filling in. One of the big headlines today, Kaiser Permanente stops surgeries for minors, these gender affirming surgeries. And this is a big deal. It's a huge, I think 12 million members in 8 states are people that use Kaiser Permanente. I think mostly in California. That's where they're based out of, Oakland. That's, I think, where a lot of their base is. But still, citing an evolving legal and regulatory environment for gender-affirming care, recent actions by the Trump administration to restrict access to prescription medications, including puberty blockers and hormones, and in rare cases, transition-related surgeries for youth. People tiptoe and dance around what is involved with transition-related surgeries, and you have to really highlight that word, surgeries. It's gender mutilation, genital mutilation, rather. And when you think about the severity of what some of these men, rather boys do to their bodies or girls do to their bodies, and trying to back up what they feel at the time is the right decision as a minor. We don't allow them to do anything else. We don't allow them to elect these type of cosmetic surgeries on their own, nor would we let their parents step in and say, you know, my kid's mental health really needs a tattoo, so I'm going to take him to the tattoo artist. You know, my kid's 11 and really wants to get a tattoo on their forehead. So, hey, this tattoo artist, you have to do it for them, or, you know, their mental illness will get worse and we have to just tattoo right across their forehead. No tattoo artist in the world would do that. When it comes to doctors, it makes me wonder, why would a doctor perform surgeries like this? It almost makes me feel like they're board of ethics, their level of ethics are in question if they would even consider doing something like this. I'm looking at this from The Hill. This is one of the write-ups of the many write-ups, but it says, addressing a joint session of Congress in March, Trump, who campaigned heavily on a promise to ban gender-affirming care for minors, called on lawmakers to pass legislation permanently banning and criminalizing sex changes on children and forever ending the lie that any child is trapped in the wrong body. He also endorsed a bill by Marjorie Taylor Greene that would make it illegal to provide gender-affirming care to youth, which I think would be the right way to handle that. Just make it so it's not even an option. Pressures alone have stopped this sort of mutilation, at least on the hospital and doctor side. But what we haven't seen so far is that taking over to every hospital, every doctor. So it looks like our guest, is it possible Billboard Chris, is he not answering, Ethan? Nah, that's a shame. Hopefully we'll be able to catch him at some point, right? Oh, okay. We'll get him next segment. That'll work pretty well. I think that I'm always gravely concerned that the things that we do because we feel it is the humane thing to do, which is kind of reminds me of that old Bill Cosby bit on his comedy record. Do you remember Bill Cosby? And he was talking about making his kids chocolate cake for breakfast. He wakes up, his wife's like, okay, make the kids breakfast. And he's like, wait, there's eggs in cake. That's healthy for you. There's milk and cake. That's healthy for you. Let's feed the kids chocolate cake, and the kids are happy. The kids got chocolate cake, and they're, you know, singing the praises of dad because they got the chocolate cake. Well, guess what? That's what kids do. They don't make the best decisions for themselves because they're children. And what's even worse is what you find is inside of schools where teachers and people that are not related to these children, that are not their parents, are sometimes putting these messages and ideas into the kids' minds or making decisions for them or allowing them to make these decisions and not telling the parents of what's going on. It's cutting the parents out. And in some cases, saying that, hey, you know what, kid, you got it all figured out at 8. So we're just going to let you do whatever you want to your body is a dangerous, dangerous thing. So we're going to be joined by Billboard Chris coming up after the break. And the big news that we just saw here in Kaiser Permanente, I'm saying it weird, but this is a big news that they have electively decided to stop these genital mutilation surgeries for children. So this is a big first step. We'll get his take on that coming up. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon, 97.1 FM. Kaiser Permanente has stopped surgeries for the youth that wanted to try to change their, transition-related surgeries. The terminology they use in these articles are always, they're tiptoeing around it, and they're using this terminology to make it sound like it's no big deal. But this is a really, really adult thing for a child to be doing to their bodies, and it's a weird thing that we as adults allow children to do this to their bodies. Joining us now is someone you may know as Billboard Chris. Chris Elston, thank you for joining us here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Ryan. We're having a good week.
This is good. So let's talk about this announcement. Kaiser Permanente stops surgeries for trans minors. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so it took a little while, but Trump had an amazing executive order when he first took office, which took away federal funding from any of these institutions that are giving kids puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and surgeries. And we've been seeing other hospitals like Children's Hospital of Los Angeles, Connecticut Children's Hospital just yesterday. Today now Yale has come out and said they're not going to do this anymore because they're going to lose money. They're not doing it for the right reasons. They're doing it for money. And so they call this a pause. And quite frankly, it will be a pause until the next Democrat gets elected president. So hopefully that doesn't happen for a long time. So in the meantime, we're going to have to keep educating the population about this to get them more aware, because that's what led to all these wins in the first place. But what's curious about Pfizer is they're only stopping the surgeries. They're still going to be giving kids puberty blockers. Mm-hmm. They're still going to be doing the cross-sex hormones. So we'll see how that plays out. But it's not just because of Trump's executive order. There are all sorts of things at play right now, including the Federal Trade Commission looking into all of these clinics and hospitals for deceptive trade practices. Because sometimes, for insurance purposes or whatever, they won't even code it as gender dysphoria. They won't code it as gender transition. They'll code it as a child having an endocrine disorder. And so that's why they need these drugs. So they're trying to do anything they can. And we have to stay alert and keep on these guys, because ideologically, they still want to transition kids.
Yeah. And when you read the press releases, they're very saddened by the decision, right? They don't make it sound like they're doing this for any of the right reasons, but I also hate the language that they use for it when they say gender-affirming care, and they say the word care, like, oh boy, if you're against this, then you don't care about the youth. But they really gloss over the realization that, hey, this is genital mutilation. We're talking about cosmetic surgeries on children, in some cases irreversible. And this is a very serious topic, but they make it sound like it's care, like you're going to the doctor for a checkup. It's ridiculous the way they try to market this.
Yeah, I never use those terms. I call it what it is. This is sex-denying harm. Mm-hmm. Cutting the body parts off of a child, or off of anyone for that matter, but we're talking about kids. Cutting body parts off of kids is not care. That's not medicine. Stopping the healthy development of a perfectly healthy child is not care. This is some cultish ideology that has gripped hold of the entire Western world. Giving them the opposite sex's hormones is not care. It's causing all sorts of side effects. We know it's causing cancers, heart disease, strokes. Puberty blockers cause bone demineralization. There was a 15-year-old girl in Sweden who developed basically osteoporosis. It was called osteopenia. It's the same sort of thing. She was in chronic pain because of bone loss. And, yeah, of course, the left uses euphemisms for everything. And as usual, they're saying that kids who don't get this care, they call it life-saving care. They say that kids are going to kill themselves if we don't transition them. And that's been debunked as well, including by the ACLU's own lawyer, who in December at the Supreme Court said that completed suicides, quote-unquote, were very rare.
Well, I don't think there is much of a debate, at least from my standpoint, that there is some sort of mental illness side to this, to think that what goes through your mind, there's a certain level of unhealthy thinking that gets you to this point. And I think your job as a parent is to love your child in a way to make sure you're doing what's best for them, not to give in to what's going through their mind to make them have bad decisions, because in their mindset, what they're doing is confirming the illness, and we shouldn't be doing that.
That's right. The actual affirming care is to tell your children that they are beautiful just as they are. No drugs or scalpels needed. That they can be quirky. They can be a bit different. They can defy stereotypes, and that there's no right or wrong way to be a boy or girl. Those are the actual progressive messages. And the world all understood this until about 10 minutes ago. But you're absolutely right about the mental illness component, and that is not to say all these kids are mentally ill. It's not to be used as a slight. It's just a fact. And if you look at the data from the Tavistock, or the Gender Identity Development Service in England, where they've now shut down that clinic, we know that 70% of the kids, and this is out of thousands, 70% had five or more coexisting mental health comorbidities. Autism is extremely prevalent. According to their own data in England, 35% of the kids had moderate to severe autism. It's definitely much higher than that when you include the more mild cases. These kids have borderline personality disorder. In more than half the cases, one of their parents is missing or deceased or just out of the picture. Oftentimes the mothers, according to one earlier study, 52% of the mothers of these boys struggling with gender dysphoria had themselves borderline personality disorder. Kids in state care are way overrepresented, like British Columbia, where I'm from, where one psychologist is transitioning 500 kids in foster care out of a total of 6,000. So it's just all these struggling kids. And yes, we need to help them, but you don't help children. You don't help problems of the mind by changing their bodies and stopping puberty. It's totally insane.
With you being in British Columbia, do you feel there's going to be some sort of government interference with your message? They don't like it there.
Well, my government certainly doesn't currently. But I say whatever I want, wherever I want. I've been doing this 5 years all across Canada. In the early going, I was arrested twice after getting assaulted, similar to just what happened in Brussels, Belgium, to me a few weeks ago. But no charges and something like 350 police interactions. I know what I'm doing, and we are allowed to have conversations. We do have freedom of expression guaranteed in our Constitution. It does come with a few more caveats than your First Amendment, which is superior. But no one's employing me, so no one can fire me, and I'm just going to keep giving my message. Good luck trying to prosecute me.
All right. Well, your message is out there, billboardchris.com. Is that where you want people to go to learn more?
Yeah, that'd be great. And actually, I just started a nonprofit. I haven't officially launched it yet, but they can go to wespeaktruth.com, and we'll be adding some more resources to that in the next couple of days. But for Americans especially, that's probably the place to go, wespeaktruth.com.
I can guess who assaulted you at some of these different events. I probably don't have to stretch my imagination that far, but you're still going and you got the sandwich board, you got the message, and I'm sure it starts some good conversations. Hopefully the people are receptive to hear it, at least some of them.
Oh yeah, I get support from more than 90% of the population. I don't worry about the haters. My message is the one of positivity. Like I said, children are beautiful just as they are. No drugs or scalpels needed. And everyone instinctively understands that. People don't believe the harm that is being done to these kids. The Democrats, the leftists, they tell you for the longest time, they're not doing surgeries on kids. Well, then why are all these hospitals suddenly coming out with statements saying that they're going to stop doing surgeries on kids?
Yeah.
They just lie.
It's such a lie.
And because it's so unbelievable, people don't believe it. And I understand that. But we've got so much evidence now. I'm making friends all over the world. So we're winning. And we're just going to keep winning.
Yep. BillboardChris.com. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
And I find that during this past election, this topic would come up, and you know Donald Trump was one that actually took a pretty strong stance on this. We shouldn't be doing this to kids. We shouldn't be mutilating them this way, especially minors. And they would ask, okay, well, Kamala Harris, what's your standpoint on this? Well, this is only something the right imagines happens. this is in their imagination. You know, they would say these sort of deflection answers. And ultimately, they were on the side of these people that were mutilating these children, and calling it gender-affirming care. So I do applaud people like Billboard Chris. I think he's doing good work. And I'm glad we had a moment to talk to him here. All right, I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. We'll do the audio cut of the day coming up as we get ready to wrap up the show. If you want to find me online, at Ryan Recker on Twitter, Ryan Recker Radio on Facebook. You're listening to 97.1. And welcome back. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in for Mark Reardon. And boy, did we learn a lot today. It's a shame Hulk Hogan passes away at the age of 71. When I go home, the first thing I'm going to do when I talk to my wife, honey, that's some bad news for you. I don't know if she's seen it or not. She really doesn't pay attention to any of this stuff. She doesn't follow trends on social media. This may be breaking news to her when I go home, and she'll wonder why I'm so distraught. Honey, hold me. But there's been what a week of entertainment news and celebrity deaths. It's been a wild one. How about we go right to the audio cut of the day?
Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
I'm a fan of Tom Homan and how frank he is and straightforward with his assertments of this is what's happening, not we're going to do this, but this is what happened. I really like it. Let's play clip number 26.
You throw a stone at an ICE officer, you're going to jail. You put Love hands it. On an ICE officer, you're going to jail. You impede an ICE officer from doing his job, you're going to jail. Here's what American people need to know. ICE is enforcing the laws that Congress enacted. If you don't like it, then change the law. But ICE agents every day are taking public safety threats off the street, national security threats off the street. Every day, ICE is making this country safer.
He's right. He's 100% right. And they caught that rock thrower in Mexico. He was throwing, what were they, cylinder blocks or something? They were showing him. The guy sitting on the side of the road, he's just picking these things up and throwing them as if they were laid out for him to do that, like it was prepared and he was just waiting for the moment. Very dangerous. And you can't really call them rocks. I mean, we're destroying these windshields as they were driving by. And you wonder, why do people feel like their life's in danger if there's a mob of people on the freeway? Because stuff like this happens. It's this frank reality of the situation. All these people that hop on the freeway in protest and then a car ends up hitting one of them because they feel like they're going to get killed by that mob if they don't leave immediately. It's a simple type of self-defense. But there you have ICE agents as traveling. You got people throwing cylinder blocks through their windows. It amazes me the pure restraint that these agents are able to show. Another clip I wanted to play real quick. I think this is clip 5. The FCC, Brendan Carr, was asked about Colbert and the implications with that. We play clip 5.
When President Trump ran for election, he ran right at these legacy broadcast media outfits and the New York and Hollywood elites that are behind it. And he smashed the facade that these are gatekeepers that can control what Americans think and what Americans can say. And once you do that, You've exposed the business model of a lot of these outfits as being nothing more than a partisan circus. And so I think there's a lot of consequences that are flowing from President Trump deciding, I'm not going to play by the rules of politicians in the past and let these legacy outfits dictate the narratives in the terms of the debate. And he's succeeding. Just look at what's happening. NPR has been defunded. PBS has been defunded. Colbert is getting cancer. You've got anchors and news media personalities losing their jobs. Again, all of this is downstream of President Trump's decision to stand up. And he stood up for the American people because the American people do not trust these legacy gatekeepers anymore. And all of this, I think, is consequences of that broader dynamic.
I like that we got a chance to talk about this with Rob Schneider yesterday on the show. How cool was it that we had actor comedian Rob Schneider on the show, and I got to ask him my Saturday Night Live question? I felt bad at the end. I know we were pushing a little bit late on his time that we asked him for, and he called in right on time. Celebrities don't always do that, but he called in. He was right here when we needed him, and he let me go a little bit long, which I hope I didn't hold up another interview, but I had a Norm Macdonald question I've always wanted an answer to, and he confirmed it, so now I always know that's true. But one of the points I made to him yesterday was, you're Stephen Colbert, you're losing $40 million a year. You criticized your bosses and the people that pay you. And they said, well, maybe, just maybe, it might be a bad idea to go after the people that are willing to lose $40 million. They'll go to bat for you. And then you want to give them a hard time and realize you're not on their team anymore. Sorry, we're done losing money. It was so bad, they're going to fire the staff. What is it, 200 people or so? They're going to be out of a job now because Stephen Colbert thought it was a good idea to take this route. And that could be fine. I mean, that could be all those things. But I think the main motivation here is they were losing money and they were not the biggest show on television. I guess it's one thing to say there's a little bit of a premium in order to have all these different extra eyes if you're taking it away from other networks. But you have Greg Gutfeld that has more people watching him with a fraction of the staff. He has like a dozen people, non-union workers, on his show. And I think he gets about 3 million viewers a night. Stephen Colbert gets about 1.8 million viewers total. And he's got 200 people and they're losing $40 million a year. So do the math. It doesn't justify continuing on even further. So before we go, I wanted to bring Ethan on real quick because earlier in the show, I brought up that LeBron James is suing AI companies. These AI companies are not let me just say, no ethics in AI video and audio generation whatsoever. It doesn't exist. Ethan, you found the video of LeBron James and what got him all upset to sue these companies, didn't you?
I mean, it wasn't hard to find. It was like the first thing that popped up on Twitter when I opened it. But yes, I did see it.
All right. Do you have the video on your cell phone right now? I want you to watch this 15-second video and give us commentary of what's happening so people can understand why LeBron James is suing artificial intelligence. Okay? Let's give it a try.
I can't believe you're making me do this. Okay. So Please. The first thing that you see is LeBron James looking at a very pregnant belly. You know, it's not shirt over the belly. Belly is out. He is caressing his tummy, looking at it very, very carefully. And then the next shot is him being pushed into an ambulance, taken to the hospital. Once again, very pregnant. He's wearing his Lakers uniform, by the way. Stephen Curry is help pushing him into the ambulance. The next shot is Stephen Curry pushing him on a stretcher in the hospital to his bedroom. Once again, belly still out. The next shot is him holding his new baby. Steph Curry is there as the midwife nurse. The baby has a full-on beard. And LeBron is holding it. The next shot, Stephen Curry is holding the bearded baby. And then that's basically the gist of it.
Ethan, you did a great job today. Thank you for that. Hopefully you don't go home and are going to resent, but I think a lot of people are going to be looking up pregnant LeBron James later. Thank you for the show today. It was great working with you. I'm Ryan Recker, filling in on 97.1 FM Talk.
You kill me.
Get more at 971talk.com.